The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 6th chapter. Then Jesus looked up at his disciples and said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you will be filled. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, and when they exclude you, revile you, and defame you on account of the Son of Man. Rejoice on that day and leap for joy, for surely your reward is great in heaven, for that is what their ancestors did to the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you have received your consolation. Woe to you who are full now, for you will be hungry. Woe to you who are laughing now, for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when all speak well of you, for that is what their ancestors did to the false prophets. But I say to you that listen, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And for anyone who takes away your coat, do not without even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you. And if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. There's a powerful film done in 2005 titled Joyous Noël. It's actually spelt in French, J-O-Y-E-O-U-X, Noël. But I'll say Joyous Noël because I can't really speak French. And I don't know if you've ever seen this film, but it's a really wonderful, incredible film that highlights the story that's rarely heard in history books, where German, French, and Scottish troops formed a ceasefire during World War I on Christmas Eve in 1914. And this film is a powerful one that captures the carnage and the bloodshed of war, turning into the quest for relationship and for respect. One of the lines, actually, of a Scottish commander who was later tried for treason. When he was put on trial, he responds to those superiors who found this Christmas Eve truce confounding. He says, "You know, without an enemy, there can be no war." This Sunday lifts up the theme of peace, put forward by the United Nations International Day of Peace, which was celebrated around the world, as I said, this last Wednesday, the 21st. And this day was first celebrated in 1981 with the United Nations resolution to, quote, "recall that the promotion of peace, but at the international and national level, is among the main purposes of the United Nations and its charter. Indeed, it should be one of the main purposes of the world." And so thousands of events actually took place this last Wednesday, which honor the advancements of peace, but also look to the challenges that still remain. Our world today, as the time of Jesus, desperately needs peace. As the film Joyous Noël points out, war can scar and ruin entire generations. Yet, in my experience, days like the International Day of Peace or the peace sign, in some cases, can mean and are cast off maybe as naive or generalist or even hippy-dippy. Peace can be a nice ideal, waving of that peace sign. But it's an ideal which is too general, never can be fully realized, says some critics. And yet, I chose our gospel text today for multiple reasons, but one of the main reasons that I chose this Sermon on the Mount, or as it is in Luke, that the version that we have today, the Sermon on the Plain, as it's known, it actually gives some pretty direct instructions for peace. Jesus says, "But I say to you that listen, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you." And he continues on with actually something more specific. He says, "If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you, and if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you." So what is Jesus getting at here? Is this peace that is suggested in this text, this Sermon on the Plain, too general, too out there for our world today? Is the peace that Jesus is suggesting a nice scene, one which, you know, all of those soldiers are around the campfire sharing Christmas Eve greetings, but which will never come to pass fully? Is it one of those suggestions? What exactly does Jesus mean by love your enemy? Well, I think that a lot of us can get confused when we read this one passage, especially when referring to actually one of the most famous concepts of all time in the Bible, and that is to turn the other cheek. What is Jesus meaning here? Now, if you're like me, maybe some of you have thought of this passage, maybe, you know, suggesting some kind of self-sacrifice, right? Sacrificing ourselves to our enemies. Maybe it's saying, well, we need to be a model and present a sacrificial kind of love, just as Jesus does. Jesus is calling us to maybe turn the other cheek, sacrifice some of ourselves for the greater good. Well, that's how this passage has traditionally been interpreted. But in reality, I don't think that this is actually what Jesus is going for at all in this passage. And I'll tell you, a scholar that has done a lot of research in this has a theory, which I think is really a good one. And so to demonstrate this theory, I'm going to ask one of our confirmation students, Luke, to come on up. And I will demonstrate this really quickly. So let's all say that Luke up here is my slave. Now, Luke, you know, pretending to be Luke, and sometimes he doesn't do everything right, you know. And so if he does something wrong as my slave, well, then I have to correct that behavior. And so I would slap Luke. And according to first century Palestine custom, what I would do is I would slap on with using my right hand, using the back of my right hand. Because not only is this a correction in Luke's behavior, but with the back of my hand, I am reminding Luke in first century Palestine that Luke is a lesser level than I am. He is a lesser social status than I am. And so this slap is meant to remind him of his stature, my slave. Now, let's just say, so I'm going to slap you this way and you naturally go like that. Now, let's just say, if I slap you, but instead, you turn the other cheek. So turn your cheek that way. Now, This provides me with a quandary. Because I'm a good Jew, and Jewish purity law indicates that I cannot slap you at all with this left hand. Because this is the hand that one uses for the bathroom. This is the hand that I use to clean unclean animals with. So as a Jew, I am prohibited at all from using this hand to correct behavior. So when you turn the other cheek, I now am forced to hit you with the open part of this hand, the open part of my right hand. Except this is still a problem, because when I do this, when I hit Luke with the open face of my right hand, that comes across in first century Palestine as a punch or as a challenge. So in reality, when I am hitting you with this part of my hand, I am saying that Luke is of the same status as me. I am reminding Luke how I would, as a person of the same status in a challenge, I am bringing him up to my level. Thank you very much. Let's give Luke a hand. So thus, turning the cheek, again, this is an interpretation of Palestinian history and customs and social culture, but this is a way that becomes an act to force the aggressor to see the other person as equal. So maybe this is getting at something a little bit more specific, less hippy-dippy idea of peace. Peace is not just the absence of conflict, but the bringing of the other up to the same level as yourself. Loving your enemies is not just playing nice, but radically seeing them, your enemies, as a fellow child of God, just like yourself. You know, when I was a hospital chaplain in seminary, I had the opportunity to lead worship at a couple times at the anorexia treatment center. It's part of the hospital training that I had. And one of the worship services that I led used this exact text from Luke, the Sermon on the Plains, which after my short little message that I gave, I sat down and we had a discussion about it with the group that was present. And I was blown away by one of the questions that one of the young women asked me. She said, "You know, I have many enemies in my life who I've encountered, friends, family, coworkers. And it's true that these enemies have done some awful things to me. Yet there is one enemy that scares me more than anything and who I have the hardest time loving. That enemy is myself. How do I love that enemy?" Philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, I think, says it clearly when he writes, "But the worst enemy you can meet will always be yourself." So what does it look like then to turn the other cheek on yourself? Maybe instead of this International Day of Peace Sunday being maybe for you as an excuse to think deeper on different international conflicts and spin your wheels about how to solve big national issues, maybe it should start with elevating all parts of yourself to equal status in peace. You know, that voice inside your head that sometimes leads you to make the wrong decisions, or that part of your body that you hate and you feel that people notice and judge. That way that you might get distracted by something and miss things that are important. Or that part of you that still feels lost in addiction and grief? What would it mean to elevate all of those things and come to peace with the fact that God loves you, even your inner enemies? And notice, I want to be very clear on this. Notice I'm not saying we need to give in to our enemies, right? I don't think that Jesus is saying this either. Certainly, if our enemy is addiction or depression or anger, it's important not to let these enemies have the last word. But by elevating these things in our lives, we are simply giving them space and the right to exist, not sweeping them under the rug. And by doing just that, I have to believe that we have more of an opportunity of choosing a substantive peace that incorporates our whole self, not just a piecemeal peace. Many of you are probably aware that it's the first presidential debate tomorrow, and it promises to be a whopper. Insults, stretching of facts, getting an edge over an opponent, it's all going to be there. It will be anything but peaceful. And a peek into how our country and world have become in many ways so fragmented. And I wonder, you know, what will happen when all of the debates are over, all the lights turned off, and what will be left to bring this division, a division that's very real in our country, together? You know, there's a sign, a billboard that you pass going up 93 to Flathead Lake. And it's on your left between St. Ignatius and Ronan. And it says this. It says, "Peace, make it happen." Now, I agree and I disagree with this sign. It's true that peace does need to happen now more than ever, especially during and after this election. And turning the other cheek to those who disagree with us is going to be needed more than ever. But we can't just go out and make it happen in the world until we can make it happen in ourselves. Until we make it happen in our own hearts. That's what has to come first. To elevate ourselves as right children of God, so that we can be peace in the world. So on this International Day of Peace Sunday, I say to you, may the peace of Christ be within you, now and forever. And from there, let's make it happen.